It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. About 8,000 people each year, they experience what is called a non-fatal drowning, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, meaning the person survives but may sustain a serious injury. We discuss emergency care for drowning victims and water safety, and you can ask a question. Add your comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tyler Bovey is a trauma coordinator and registered nurse at HSHS Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire and St. Joseph's Hospital in Chippewa Falls. Tyler, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for having me on this morning.
Good morning. So let's take a scenario here where a person comes through the emergency room after nearly drowning. They're unconscious, not breathing. How does your trauma team handle drowning cases?
So at our facility, our first thing is we're going to get our team there, like you said, the trauma team. We're going to have the whole team available and ready to treat this patient, assuming they're coming in by EMS services. And what we're going to do is assess them, and if they're unconscious and not breathing, we're going to have to work on an appropriate airway and appropriate ventilation for the patient, so something like an endotracheal tube and a breathing machine.
What about damage to the organs of the body in moments like this, in a drowning? How does the brain get affected, the heart? What is happening internally?
So with drowning victims, the big issue that we have is hypoxia, is lack of oxygen to the patient. And that leads to all different sorts of problems across all different body systems. Really, a couple to highlight are neurologic and cardiac function. Obviously, our muscles need oxygen to function, and our brain needs oxygen to continue having us work the way we do. The longer our body goes without oxygen, the worse our outcomes are. And long-term, we can be talking about some significant neurologic dysfunction.
How do you try to limit or reduce brain injury in the initial treatment phase with a patient?
Our goal at that initial phase is to get the patient, in a hospital setting would be to get them breathing appropriately again, so return oxygenation. So again, breathing tube, breathing machines, looking at do we need to put a little bit of pressure behind our breaths that we're giving the patient to help push some water out of their lungs? Do we need to give them more concentrated oxygen? We start to get as creative as possible in trying to create the best outcome for the patient.
The CDC says more than 40% of drownings treated in an emergency department do require hospitalization for further care. How do you treat patients then going forward after the emergency has ended in a case of drowning?
Some of these patients can still be just absolutely incredibly critical. So we are looking at how do we maintain their breathing and obviously maintain their cardiovascular status. We look at things like antibiotics for possible aspiration of water. You reflexively will eventually take a breath in. And what kind of water was the person in? Was it a pool or maybe a pond or a river where we have some more concern for infectious agents? And then we also really have to monitor their temperature. It's one of those things we don't always think about, but I'm thinking about our Great Lakes here. Patients that come out of those bodies of water can be incredibly cold. So you can have kind of a hypothermia component on top of all the other things that are going on with your patient.
And, you talk about rivers and lakes, very cold water. Can you step back and give us some insight on what are the signs of drowning?
So I know when we see on the movies, we see patients, flailing and screaming, help, I'm drowning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily realistic. When people are drowning, their respiratory status is compromised. So their breathing is compromised. If you're not breathing, you don't really make much sound. And oftentimes people are trying to swim. So they're actually, their limbs are underwater. So it's not this flopping, thing that we typically see on the TV. You might only see somebody just maybe with their face out of the water, or you might unfortunately see someone just floating, or you might not see somebody that was present just a second ago.
it just slipping away. And that's why it can be so scary for someone who said, well, I saw them there. They were just there. I'm going to reintroduce you, Tyler Bovey, with us, trauma coordinator at HSHS Sacred Heart and St. Joseph's Hospitals in Western Wisconsin, as we talk about drowning, water safety. You can join in with your questions and your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Tyler, let's turn to prevention. How can drownings be prevented?
Oh, this is key. Preventing drownings is going to do so much for people. So a lot of our patients, drowning victims, are young. We talk about, you know, a lot of pediatric patients under 5 years old that are having these drowning or near drowning events. So focusing on pediatric patients, having kids supervised around water at all times, just period, by an adult. Having your pool fenced in, and having an appropriate and proper life jacket on. There's all different kinds of flotation devices that are sold, but really looking for like the Coast Guard seal of approval on the life jacket for what the patient is doing. If they're boating or swimming or alone or in a group, as well as the size of the person and the appropriate fit of the life jacket.
I've also heard the tip of being an arm's length away, no farther than an arm's length away. Is that okay, or do we need to be closer?
I think that can kind of be individualized based on the patient and their age and family members and what they're wearing for a flotation device. It's a kind of a complex one, but it is very, very easy for someone to slip under the water. And a lot of our rivers and streams are not super clear. Once that person's under, they might not be where you think they were.
Can drowning occur in shallow water?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anywhere that your face or head can be underwater is a possibility of a drowning scenario.
And what about CPR and how people administer it with a drowning victim? What would you suggest?
As soon as we can get CPR started on a patient that has gone pulseless after a drowning, that's when we need to be doing it. Early intervention for these patients is really one of the key pieces to long-term good outcomes.
Is CPR performed any differently with drowning victims? I'm just thinking about all of the water inhaled and where that water goes, lungs and elsewhere. Does that at all interfere with the proper CPR steps?
No, we're going to continue to do CPR as we've been trained. So if you've been trained by like the American Heart Association, follow that training. There is some discussion about rescue breaths being maybe arguably slightly more important for drowning victims. But I think really the important thing is to start CPR and follow the way you were trained.
Can you explain about when to do chest compressions? Because, you know, you want to check for pulses, I would imagine, before you want to start those chest compressions?
Yeah, that's correct. The first thing you do is you would check for a pulse on a patient, and adult patients you're thinking more of up on the neck, and the pediatric patients there's a couple of different spots depending on their age and their size. But what you want to make sure is that there is an absence of a pulse before you go ahead and start the CPR.
How do you stay calm in those moments when you're trying to find that subtle pulse and yet, you know, mind and heart is racing, maybe people are gathering? Do you have any suggestions for how to stay really focused there and you know, really know the signs up for that pulse?
That's such a great question. In these moments, we get such a rush of adrenaline, and sometimes that can kind of interfere with good decision making. I think the important thing is to take a deep breath. The interventions that you do with that person are really only going to help them in that case.
Tyler Bovey is a registered nurse at HSHS Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire and St. Joseph's Hospital in Chippewa Falls, our guide in this discussion on how to prevent drownings. And you can be part of this. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Unintentional drownings peak this time of year. That's according to the CDC's fatal injury trends. We learn how to reduce risks while swimming in open water and how to save a life. And you can be part of this. Call in with a question, share a comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tyler Bovey is a trauma coordinator and registered nurse at HSHS Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire and St. Joseph's Hospital in Chippewa Falls. Tyler, the CDC reports drowning is the leading cause of death for children ages 1 to 4. And you say that children are more likely to drown in a swimming pool. Why is that?
You know, I don't know if I have a specific reason that I've come across, but I think it has something to do with our comfort. If this is your home swimming pool, your kids have been in it several times, everybody's very comfortable. I think there's a level of almost complacency that can happen, and that can lead to us not supervising the kids in the pool and can lead to these drownings.
Kind of letting your guard down, thinking that everyone knows the ropes here at home, where you would be more alert perhaps to in a water area that you haven't been a part of before, you haven't seen.
Absolutely.
So, you know, when the CDC says that the unintentional drownings peak this time of year, do you see that type of peak in the hospitals?
You know, thankfully, we don't see a whole ton of drownings. And I think that's a lot to do with prevention and education and getting things like life jacket loaners out there. But if we do see drownings, it does tend to be a little bit more in these summer months where we have so many more people in the water, whether it be at home or out on the lakes and rivers.
When you say life jacket loaners, meaning just people having access to life jackets?
There are several stations set up across Wisconsin for life jacket loaners, like a loaner board that the state of Wisconsin's done with some of their outstanding partners, where there are just life jackets that people can borrow for the day. And that whole point was to try to prevent drownings.
And you say that children should wear a life jacket even if they're strong swimmers. How can you judge that or, in terms of when it is okay to take off a life jacket versus make sure they have one on?
Yeah, I think it's important for children to be wearing a life jacket in the water, just period. I think that's a strong statement that we need to make. Given they may be strong swimmers, they may be a whole different gamut of things. But the important thing to realize about kids is they don't have quite the complex decision-making skills that adults end up having. There might be a little bit more risk-taking behavior. They might not see the outcomes quite as clearly. And then they're also not as strong and don't have quite as much reserve as say, an adult would.
And then water currents, especially in rivers, that those two can be not easy to assess for any type of swimmer.
Correct. And those unknown situations are where that life jacket is going to come in and really save you or save your child.
Do you have any tips for making sure the life jacket fits correctly for the size of the child or the adult?
When you're purchasing a life jacket, there should be a size, a weight-based, and then an activity with these, and that's all run through the U.S. Coast Guard. The Coast Guard will help determine what you'd be using this for. So there are some life jackets that are made for adults who are going to be out fishing by themselves. There are some made for whitewater rafting. There are some made for pediatric patients. There's good and bad swimmers. There's some that even have kind of a neck around them that'll help keep someone's head up out of the water if they weren't able to continue to tread. So they're all different things to look at when you purchase the life jacket, but then making sure that that tag and that explanation of what the life jacket is to be used for matches what you're going to be using it for.
It sounds like the technology built into life jackets has evolved since some of the basic ones from past.
Absolutely. And I think technology is going to continue to improve on these to make them maybe a little bit more comfortable to wear. But I don't think at any point we should be trading comfort for safety.
Some kids like to wear water wings. Do they provide some of the same safety support as a life jacket?
we couldn't recommend wearing water wings in place of a life jacket.
Okay.
Those are going to, you know, if you think about where those are on a kid, those are going to keep the arms up a little bit. But if that person can no longer tread water, can no longer keep their head up, those are not going to help keep your torso or your face out of the water so that you can breathe.
In when it's an accident where it is a drowning victim is able to have a stronger recovery and regain more fuller function, can you talk a little bit about those cases versus the severe cases?
Yeah, I think a lot of the recovery ends up having to do with how long the person was without oxygen. So the shorter, the better, obviously. But it can still be a really long and hard road for these patients to recover. When the brain goes without oxygen for an extended period of time, it sustains significant damage. And that can manifest in a whole variety of different ways, from speech and cognition difficulties to movement problems to memory issues. And that can really run the gamut as well, from mild to severe.
What types of clinicians, what types of doctors deal with these after effects from near drownings?
Initially, it's going to be the emergency room team, but from there, it's going to end up with the hospitalist or critical care team. And likely after that, we're going to be working with physical and occupational therapy. And then there are therapy-specific providers that do long-term rehab. We do have a hospital, within a hospital at Sacred Heart, that does specific rehab.
Specific rehab for these kinds of issues after an accident. I'm going to reintroduce you here for just a moment. We're talking about drowning prevention and the treatment protocols with registered nurse Tyler Bovee, a trauma coordinator at HSHS Sacred Heart and St. Joseph's Hospitals in Western Wisconsin. You can join the conversation at any point. Call in with a question or a comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tyler, in terms of your trauma team, what type of training has your team received in order to be able to respond to these emergencies with drownings very quickly and systematically? Can you talk a little bit about how that team works together?
The team works together so incredibly well. Start with our emergency room providers, our ER physicians. They're all board certified emergency room physicians. So that is their specialty, and that is what they find the most joy in. Our nursing team takes some specific courses, some specific trauma and pediatric courses on top of having their nursing licensure. And then we also have some incredibly gifted respiratory therapists that do specific training on airway and breathing and how to help with those interventions. We get together in a group and we will start just from the top. We have a systematic assessment that we do and systematic interventions that we all train on. And really, if you're able to see that at any point, it's a really impressive thing to see 10, 15, maybe 20 people all working in tandem without stepping on each other.
You know, this conversation can sound very scary to be around water and to do water type outings. How do you make sure that you manage the risks involved, but also not become so scared of water?
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to discourage the short but beautiful summer that we have here in Wisconsin. We get these warm temperatures. We do want people to enjoy the time outside and in the water, but do so safely. You know, with the life jackets on your children, with the life jackets on adults that are boating, by limiting alcohol use while you're on the water.
Well, Tyler, I appreciate you joining us, and thank you so much for these insights on drowning prevention.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me this morning.
That was Tyler Bovey, who is trauma coordinator and a registered nurse at HSHS Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire and St. Joseph's Hospital in Chippewa Falls. As we've been talking about drowning prevention and hearing tips on drowning, and you can visit our program page to stream or download more programs, more tips on different aspects of life in Wisconsin from The Morning Show. You can visit WPR.org/mornings. And while you're there, we welcome your ideas for future programs like you. So email your show suggestions to ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. And thank you so much. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.